Hello there, you're welcome to another interesting edition of Sports Africana. After about a two-week break, we are back, and as you know, on Sports Africana, we like to bring you the best of sports, particularly from an African perspective. We like to talk about our successes, our problems, and to celebrate the things, the people that have made us great within the continent of Africa. So today promises to be exciting. I've got someone, an ex-football player, who is going to be gracing us later on, or shortly. For those of you who have not subscribed to our Sport Africana podcast, you can click on the various podcasts directly, so that Spotify, Deezer, Apple, Google Podcast, and many more. And just click on subscribe so that you'll be able to receive any of our latest edition, and you can listen to our previous episodes as well too. Today promises to be exciting. I'm going to be speaking to someone who played football at the very highest level. He's a veteran of the Nigerian Football League. He was the 3 times highest goal scorer in the Nigerian Football League. And he played for one of the best and one of the elite clubs of the Nigerian Football Leagues late 80s into the 90s. And I'm talking about the Wanyawu National Football Club of Owerri, which is now known as Atlanta Football Club. They are not doing too badly at the moment, back in the days, Wanyawu National was one of the top 3 clubs, eventually one of the top clubs, and dominated the Nigerian Football League for quite a long time. It brings me great pleasure to introduce to you former Wanyawu National, and also he played for the Super Eagles. He had about some 14 odd caps. His name is Tony Wengwe. Tony, thanks for joining us on Sports Africana.
Adi, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, it's been a long time. We haven't spoken in a very long time. And in the wake of the pandemic and everything, you know, that puts a lot of things to a halt. I trust you're good and your family.
Yeah, everybody's fine. You know, everybody's trying to get by this pandemic, and then trying to see, you know, can at least what everybody's hoping for is the sunshine and the brightness to be able to brighten up the atmosphere and everything with it, you know, and take away this dull moment that, you know, in everybody's life. So.
I agree with you. Totally agree with you. So Tony, for those of you that may not know, you played for Wanyawu National. But I'm not going to do a resume of your career. I want you to do it. So first and foremost, how did it all started? Your football career, your family background before your football career kicked off. How did you get into football? So give us a background of your story.
I think it all started anyway. My dad was a player, so he played for the then ECN. But didn't really play that for long for them, you know. And then as we started growing up, he wanted, like every other parent, everybody was saying you have to go to school first of all before any other thing. So which we were playing at the same time, we were still going to school. For primary school, we start kicking the balls on the street with the 2 stones you're going to put on the street. And then, you know, 2 goals, you know, there you started developing. And then the interest of football, then when we were little, everybody wants to play football. The first thing is that when you run away from the house, the next thing you're going to the street and with your pack of friends and everything, and then you're putting these stones, 2 stones, one on two on, the, on two different areas, and everybody's kicking the ball against each other. As we grew up, we went to the primary school. From the primary school, you went to secondary school. Secondary school now, that's where you start developing yourself into becoming a footballer, and at the same time, you're studying. So I ended up playing for my school, which my first school was Owerri College, which was in Ojo. So which I came out as the games prefect at the end of in my final year. So we played both in the Principal Cup, which was the then everybody's dream of as a player when you're in school to play in the Principal's Cup. So we got to the further finals from Dawori College, you know, and from there I went to Igbobi College for my HSC. So, and then we played in the finals of Principal's Cup also when I was in the Igbobi College, and we won that year. And then that year against St. Gregory's, and then from there I moved up again another ladder to the academicals, Lagos State Academicals. So, which it was called the Manuel Adebayo Cup then, you know. So we partaked in it, you know, and then I was selected as among one of the players that represented Lagos State, which the coach Teller was our coach as at then.
Wow.
So we eventually won the cup, you know, won the cup again. And after that, now when you win the Adebayo Cup, you now become a feature of, you know, one or two clubs in Lagos. So your career wants to kickstart. Then we were offered scholarship to go to school, university. So I took the scholarship and I went to LASU, the Lagos State University. So we're the primary student, we're the primary pupils of Lagos State University when they just started. So we, you know, we have the beginning, that's we, then they had their own final cadre, and so the team was beginning. So we went in there. So I went into Lagos State University. I was in Lagos State University now, went for screening for ACB. I had ACB was screening, so I went for a screening for ACB. Lord and behold, I was successful. So I was now juggling between school and
football,
and maybe football, you know. So eventually we also went to Port Harcourt for the Nuga games, you know, and then we had a good year. It was not too bad. That year we came out, we came second. We came out at the quarterfinals. So basically that's how all my career started, from the early bits of my life. And then when I finished from last year now, because I was still in, I joined ACB when I was in LASU. So I finished from LASU and then continued with ACB.
And just to chip in there, for our listeners who are non-Nigerian listeners, LASU is the Lagos State University, which is owned by the Lagos State. If I'm right, Tony?
Yes, correct. So, and ACB is the African Continental Bank football club, which I later joined in, and then that's where I kick-start my career.
Before you go on,
just sorry, a quick reverse, you know, because I missed up something. Before I went to ACB, that when I was in LASU, I was playing for Concord FC.
Okay.
So I was playing for Concord FC and was going to school. So when I almost was about to graduate, that's when I got the admission for, that's what I went into ACB. So for after my graduation now, and now continued now with ACB.
Great. Wow. So, I mean, you're one of the few, well, many few footballers that were able to juggle academics with playing football. But the good thing was, before you moved to ACB, you were able to finish your university degree, which I think is an advantage. So who are the players that you can remember that you played with in ACB when you joined ACB?
There's a lot of them, you know, a lot of them, and then a lot of them, you know, the likes of Chinedu Odiare, who then was, you know, played with the junior national team then. Yeah, you have the likes of Kingsley Ezekwesili, you know, who also played for, and then Omorige.
Okay.
So, Omorige, you know, Friday Lahore, you know, and Obinna Obiaka, Steve Abaroway, and you know, then ACB were like, it was like an assembly of a lot of big players. Then the coach was Gideon Njoku, and Coach Emordi. Tony Nacheta was the chairman as at that time. You know, so they assembled this team. Unbelievable, the amount of talent that we had then in ACB, it's surprising sometimes when you look at it. And then I was just this young man trying to make headways with the likes of well-established players, all of them already there. Nicolas Ukadike, Joseph Oko, who was the White House player for that month that I joined, you know, the first month of that I joined, and at the same time he was the highest goal scorer the previous year. So you'll see that you are playing in the midst of a lot of players who are well established in the league. William Opara was our goalkeeper. Alex Opara also was our goalkeeper. So we had this bunch of talent, you know. So, but like everything, when the game started, they were looking at you like, okay, you're a young player, you need to start learning your trade and everything. But in my head, I didn't want to do that, because that was not what I wanted. I wanted to break into that team, because breaking into that team was what will establish and, you know, give you that respect that you're looking for. And from the early stage, I was able to break into the team, because we had a tournament in Lagos that was organized by Tony Nacheta. He brought, John Fashionu to come to Nigeria, because he parlayed with him, and then we had this tournament, which was hosted in Unico Stadium. They invited the likes of Rangers, stationery stores, one or two few other teams to play the tournament. So there, I was looking at it like, no, this is my opportunity to be able to grab the first team jersey. So I ended up being the highest goal scorer in that tournament as a young man. Very exciting, you know, for I grabbed the opportunity that they gave me for the first time by Gideon Njoku, who was the coach. So from then on, I started gaining the respect of the senior players. So because that's what, if you're producing, you start getting their respect, and then that is when they start encouraging you, start telling you things, how to, you know, what to do and all that. And then as you're training with them every day, you're learning. So with that, I was able to establish myself with ACB. And then in our first game that we played in Boko against BCC Lions, I started that match. And from there, my career kicked off.
Right. So how many seasons were you at ACB before you... And how did your move to Uwanyawo occur? So first, how long were you at ACB before you moved to Uwanyawo National? And how did they scout you?
I moved from ACB to Uwanyawo. I played ACB just for one season.
Wow.
You know, because after one season, you can imagine a young man that has established himself. After one season, I was hunted by a lot of clubs, both Julius Berger, even Stores in Lagos at that time, because then they had this new chairman who also, he was trying to make sure that Stores becomes, has that... name that they've had over the years. So he was now kind of like using his resources to make sure that the club goes forward, you know. So I was coddled by BCC Lions, Rangers, and then from nowhere, I didn't know that Uwanyawo has already been eyeing me, and I'm from Imo State. So then team manager, who is Ichi Uche Mofo, came to Lagos, because we played our final match was against the Uwanyawo National. We played them in Port Harcourt. So they were leading us 1-0. 10 minutes to go, we were attacking because we're trying to equalize. So we attacked through the flank, and then there was this massive pull out from the right side, and I just went through the over Edward Anser's hand, and then not the ball into the net. We ended up playing the game 1-1. So, and throughout that match, I gave them serious problems. So I didn't know, because you're playing, not knowing that people are watching you and then people are after you or things like that. So I was in Lagos. Then my friend Obinna came to me and said, "Tony, there are people looking for you." I said, "How?" Because he is from Owerri. And then he played in, he has already played in Eimba, then before coming to ACB. So I said to him, "Say, who are they?" He said, "No, say this, these are people from Wayo National. I said, wow. He said, okay. He said, yes, they asked him to come and bring me to the hotel where they were. So I followed him. We went to the hotel. There I saw Uche Ejimofor for the day, you know. We sat face to face for the first time. I've seen him over the period that we're playing and all, but that was the first time I saw him. And he said, oh, you this boy, you think I'll be coming, I'll just leave Lagos and then I'll leave away to come to Lagos and I won't see you. If I've looked for you in, what's it called, in your camp, I didn't see you. They said you went to your father's house. I said, yes, I wasn't around. He said, you're lucky that I'm still, because I said, I must make sure that I see you before I leave for away. So he was with then the SportsLink chairman, who was Ejikenze, that was his name, you know, the owner of SportsLink. So both of them were together in the hotel. So Ejike was a staunch supporter of Wayo National then, and he's the owner of SportsLink. So he said to me, so I said, what is it? So he said, we want you to sign for Wayo National. I said, but I have just spoken to Idama about Idama, because Idama invited me to his office. So I've spoken to Idama. So he said, listen, let me tell you, whether you've spoken to Idama or you've spoken to any other person, you know, there is no way you're going to go. For a start, you're an Imo State man, and then we have come to collect our own. So whether you like it or not, you have to sign. So we had that discussion. So after much this thing, Ejikenze now promised that whatever he's telling you, that he's going to make sure that everything that was promised there, and then that we have everything that we've agreed on the contract, will be signed and sealed in Lagos here. So I had the negotiations with them, because then in Nigeria, then we don't really have individual managers that will negotiate for you. So you have to negotiate for yourself based on your abilities and, you know, how, what you've been doing on the pitch. So we had our agreements and everything. So that's sealed, and that's how my career with Wayo National started.
Wow. So how much was it then? I mean, I know Wayo was one of the top playing football clubs at the time.
Yes, the transfer then was close to about they paid ACB close to about 25,000 naira,
which was
my transfer, which was quite a lot of money then. And then you're on a contract of we had a contract of 5,000 naira as at that time monthly.
Wow.
So and a match bonus, with match bonuses, then my, because we normally have what is called sign-on fee. So my sign-on fee was 150,000 naira.
That was going to.
That's how I moved to, because no other team could match that offer as at that time from any other club side. So I had no other option to move to my own national.
Wow, great. So talk to us through your Wayo National career. You know, obviously you've established yourself somewhat in ACB and everything, but now you're moving another gear in your football career. And how did it feel like when you got there? Did you feel any form of intimidation? And don't forget that this was you were still early in your football career.
Yeah, and it's football, you never stop learning, that's the thing. And then, you know, no matter whatever you have achieved in the past, when the season begins, that goes out of the window. You know, it's I came to Iwayan then. Iwayan has this big aura around it because of their achievements over the years in terms of the kind of players that have played under them, their trophies. And then they have this idea that they must qualify for Champions Cup every year. So you know that once you're there, the main focus is to win the league and then play the Champions League. So there's this massive pressure from the day you step into a way, because they unveil players. In a way, so fans believe it or not, we have like the first training that we ever trained in the stadium, we had like 5,000 to 10,000 people in the stadium. You think we are playing a match? So people coming to see the new players that have signed for, because they've looked every year, fans in a way will look at the newspaper and then see the names of the player, the new players coming in. So that is how they know that, oh, this person is coming, this person is coming, this person is coming in. Then the next thing, they'll come to the stadium because they don't want to believe that you're not there. So they will come to see for themselves. And that's why their first training, they will all troop into the stadium to see for sure that this person that they said they've signed, he is there. If not, they will put a lot of pressure on the management. So the management will always make sure that whoever that they leave, they put his name out, must be in the stadium on that day. So at that first training, we all came out. You will see it's like an assembly of the home-based national team of Nigeria. That's almost what it's like. Because from there, you see the likes of Imo Okocha, Ajibade, Isaac Semitoje, you know, the Michael B, the, you know, all these guys, people who played in the national team will be there. Now you see everybody, we are just like there. At Wobi KZ, Imo Okocha, Aisha Ajato, you know, so you now look at yourself and say, this is the big boys league now. So you want to also be part of that thing. So what happens is that every training session is like a tough finance for everybody, because of you dare not lose your position in the team, because if you lose your position, it will be very difficult for you to get it back again. So it became, that was, going to one-on-one was good for me because it helped me grow faster, because I had to now up my game in order for me to be able to keep maintaining. You have to perform week in, week out just to hold on to that jersey so you don't slip.
So in your first year, you won the highest goal scorer in Nigeria.
Yes, that was the thing. My first year in the Wyoming National, we almost lost the league just by a fraction. You know, I think we lost it to, let me see, I'm trying to recall the team we lost the league to, because that year we were under pressure with the Continental, and at the same time playing in the league. So we tried to get to the Continental final, you know, but eventually when we lost that in the Continental, it was difficult for us to, you know, catch up with the league. So the pressure was, you know, the pressure of that year made us lose the league by 3 or 4 points away, you know. So, but I think the next year now, we captured the FA Cup. You know, so it is, I had a challenging time in Wyoming National, but the challenge in the sense that it helped me to grow, because I was looking over my shoulders all the time because of this. After the first season, the second season, you'll be looking over your shoulders because of the amount of players that they are bringing in. Because every season, the Wyoming National will always refresh the team by bringing in players again to, you know, to fortify the team. So obviously, in order for you to keep that level that you have, you need to be on the top of that level, consistently till you leave the club.
Right, and of course, I was going to talking about bringing in fresh players every season. There was a polite young player that Umayao brought in, and that young player became well known across the globe.
Yeah.
That player is Juan Kwakano. You were still in Wyoming National when it was brought into the team. Talk us through how did Wyoming join the team, and what did you know about him? How did it start for him? You played with him, but you
but you
were there before him.
Yes, I was there before him. You know, when you come to when I got to Were, we have all these there's all these smaller teams that is in and around the Were. So, and everybody has this, especially everybody in the East, they have this focus that they want to play for Iwaya National. So any opportunity that they have to play against us, maybe either in the FA Cup or in a friendly game, everybody wants to show his or her talent. So we had a friendly warm-up game with Uncle Kano's team, which was Works. They called them Works that time, Federal Works. So we had a training session in the morning. So we were playing a game. So I saw even me playing it on, you know, playing in the pitch in that friendly game. You could see the bunch of talent that was on the other side, the young bunch of talent that was on the other side, you know. So, but you cannot sign everybody, you know. And then what happened was that after the training, I don't know who he was. You can imagine I was coming. I didn't grow up in Owerri. I grew up in Lagos, and coming to stay in Owerri for the first time. Never met him before. The first time we were meeting, was in that on that training pitch that day. So, and then from look of, because I'm older than him, from the look of things, they look up to you because they've seen you. They come to watch you on series of occasions. So we started the game, and then all of a sudden you could see how he caressed the ball, how he touches the ball, you know. And I was wondering, wow. So after the game, you know, after the match, so we're all going, because we most times the team manager will always come to chit chat, you know, with you, and you know, trying to pick your brains or something or so. So he came to me and said, "Oh, you this Lagos boy, I think you've seen my, you've seen how we groom young players." I said, "Who is I asked him, "Who is that? There's a young man that I saw playing against us." But I asked him. He said he doesn't know him anyway. I said, "GM, that's what we call him." I said, "GM, you see that guy? If you people don't go and sign him now, you use big money to go and bring him back again to Owerri. So it is better for you people to go and get him now that he's still in Owerri here, than put him in your team, so that you let him build himself from here and then start his career." GM said to me, "Oh, no, we don't sign young players. We don't sign young players, because Iwaya is not noted for signing young players. Iwaya will sign you as an established player, because that's what the fans want to see." And I said to him, you're better off signing him now." So we had that conversation. Conversation just went like that. Then one day I was, you know, still with the GM, we were talking. I said to GM again, "Don't you think," he said, "What's my interest with this?" I said, "Don't you think that it is good that you people start changing a little bit of your culture in order for you to now have advantage over some players and some teams with the crop of players that is growing up here?" He said, "What do I mean?" I said, "I heard," because then rumors have started going up that they are going to sign for Equus Men. There were three of them: Wanko Kano, MC Ukamekula, and AK Nanado. These three people I mentioned were three young players who are very talented. So we got to hear rumors that they were going to sign for the Port Harcourt team.
Eagle Cement,
yeah. So somebody was saying it when we all sit, and I said to Jim, "Listen, did you see that?" So GM said, "Okay, you have been biting my ear because of this. I will send for this player." So he now sent for Wanko Kano, sent for MC and the rest of them. So they all came. I wasn't in the room with them. He had chats with them and everything, you know. Then because we were in his house. He went to talk with them and then came out to come and meet us. But most times we sit down in his house,
senior players.
Yeah. So I was there with the likes of Mike Obi, Ransom Madu, Obinna Obiaka in his house. So we just sat. So he finished chatting with them and then came out again and said, what would do we think that if he wants to sign this 3 players? I said, for me, I don't mind, because this So Obinna supported me, but we had this, you had some group of players who are so set in their ways because they grew up in Owerri. They don't want the younger ones to join them in the team because of to feel that, oh, both of us are all rubbing shoulders and playing the same team. So they were kicking against it. So I said to Jeff, what are you looking for? Do you want the talent to help your team and then sell this player off to make more money tomorrow? Or you're listening to somebody who is fighting his ego against the success of the team? So that was how, in a nutshell of what happened. And then the GM now made his own decision to sign them and then bring them into Wanyonachi. So that's how Kalu and the two others, Ekena and MC, came into Wanyonachi in my second year of in Wanyonachi.
And what was the impact?
To be honest with you, among the three of them, the most talented, let me be honest, is Ekena Nnadu. When you see you as a player watching him, his father was part of the Oto Gloria coaching crew when Nigeria won the Nations Cup. So you will see the talent in him. But he has one problem. He's lazy. He doesn't like to work hard. He believes that God has given him natural talent. He can only use that. But he doesn't know that you have to balance your talent with your hard work. So, but Wankwo had talent and then he has the desire and then the knowledge to succeed. So among the three of them, he was the first person to break into the team. His first game was against Julius Berger, Lagos. And then he did excellently well. And from there, it's history now. That was how, from there, he was able to get called up to the national team, moved on to, from the under 20, first to the under 21, and then was invited to the under 17. And then his career moved on from there after.
Wow. Talking about your career in Wayang National, another highlighting moment was when Wanyon played in one of the continental games. You played against, I think it was an Algerian team, if I'm right.
Tunisian team.
It was a Tunisian team. And I can't remember the name of the team, but on your way back, you had an air crash. Can you talk us through that period?
We had a continental game in Tunis to play Esperance of Tunisia. So, and that was the first leg. So, because of if we were to follow private airlines, and we're going to go. I think there's the flight was we didn't get any direct flight to Tunis, so we were meant to go somewhere else, and then from there again. So they looked at it and said the hassles were too much, so we hired a private airline, which was the Oriental Airline, to take us to Tunis. So we went to Tunis. On our way, we had to refuel in Algiers in Tamanrasset, and then we flew into Tunis.
This was after the.
Before the game. The route where we were coming, we came through the same route. We came from Nigeria to Algiers, refuel, and then we took off again from there to Tunisia. So, and when we were coming back, after the game now, which we lost 1-0. So, we finished the game. So, because it's a chartered flight, we had our dinner, everything at the hotel. So we wait, everybody took their showers, had their dinners, rested for about 1 hour, and then they said we would need to leave. You know, we need to start going to the airport to fly back again to, because of we had a game 2 days later in a lorry. So we went to the airport, and then we were there at the airport. You know, we didn't know what was happening. So they announced our boarding again. There was a slight delay for like 1 hour from the time they said we were going to board. So we later was announced to say to board. So we all boarded, went to the plane. So we all sitting. And then again, we were waiting, you know, like when you finish boarding, they announce, because it's a private plane. Obviously, everybody's on board. So the next thing is, maybe if you wait like 20, 30 minutes, maybe you see the plane taxiing away to the tarmac. But we didn't. So we were sitting down there, the plane was steaming. Nobody knew what was happening, nothing, you know. So we didn't know exactly what was going on. So we had almost close to about 2 hours delay sitting inside the plane. So when we eventually taxied and then started going, with the normal process, I think the way they were routed was to refuel again in Tamarasset and then continue to Lagos. But unfortunately, I think we came into Tamarasset, we were meant to come into Tamarasset when it was dark, in the early hours of the morning, maybe 2-3 o'clock in the night, you know, when is this. But I think we came into Tamarasset in the early hours of the morning, which said about 6, 5, 6, 7, when the daylight has come up. And you know, over the years now, the stories and what happened, the event and things like that, how it unfolded, you start recalling, and then that's the way we, you know, you're able to piece in 2 to 3 things together. They said they had this sandstorm. They normally have it in that area in Tamarasset in the morning, because it's a mountainous area. So I believe that they refused us to land because the fog and the dust, visibility was minus, I don't know what minus, you know, so it was impossible to see the ground. So they forced the pilot to leave. But, and the only nearest place for him to go was Orgyet, which is 2 hours from there. So probably he knew that he wouldn't be able to make it from there to go to get to Algiers to fuel back and then go back to Lagos, get to Lagos. So he was stubborn. I think he stubbornly, because you could feel that something was happening, because all of us were tired. This was early hours of the morning. All of us were still sleeping, and we had the whole plane to ourselves. So everybody was having the 3 sitters to lie down and sleep, you know. So from my own recollection was that the air hostess came to me and then said, because they know us, the airline is owned by Chief Wayan. So the air hostess, most of them, we know them because we use them both in Lagos and then whenever we are traveling. So she came to me and said, Tony, get up, put your seatbelt on. You know, kind of like, so we didn't know what was happening. We thought we in my head, I was just okay, maybe because we were about to land, to pick fuel, but not knowing that there's a situation already outside. So when I put my seatbelt, I reluctantly, quickly just clicked my seatbelt, sat up again, still dozing, you know, half asleep and half awake. It wasn't up to 5 minutes. The only thing I heard was like, bang, this almighty bang, bang, boop, 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 and that was it. People were screaming, people were running out, you know, our guys were jumping out, you know. So I looked, and my head was upside down from the seat and everything. The cabin on top of that was lying on top of all the seats, because the cabin came down, the weight of the cabin came down. So luckily I was under the seat, the cabin was like this, so on top of me. Quickly I unbelted myself. So what, the only thing that would be coming into your head, would there be any explosion of fire? So I turned around, looked at the back, I saw light from where the plane has broken. So I jumped out of there. I jumped out of the seat. You know, you could now be jumping through seat and falling, jumping until you got to where that open area is, and you jump from there. Once you jump, you land, you roll, and then you continue running. You ran like for maybe 200 yards or something away from the plane. Somebody will grab you. Somebody grabs you, you know, just give you a little bit of sanity to calm down. So they grabbed me, and then I was still struggling. They grabbed me and they were telling me, because they don't speak English, what they speak is French. So, but they were trying to tell us, come here. So they grab you, then they take you away from the area of the plane. Meanwhile, there was fire brigade there who was pouring water and foams and everything on the plane, not to catch fire and all the rest. You know, it's when we finally came in now, when everything has settled, the dust has settled, that we realized that the runway was on our side, on this side, the tarmac was in front of us, and the plane came directly into the tarmac, into the terminal building. So we were lucky. The whole plane would have ended up inside the terminal building, but because there was this massive lightning pole, just like the lightning poles you see in stadiums, right? So one clipped off the wing. So as the plane was, you know, coming, it clipped up that wing, then skid itself, turned around, and then used the side now, and then went into the building. On the other side of the main building, this is the main the terminal building of the airport. On this side is where they have their fuel dump, you know, but it's built with a brick house, and that's where we slammed in with the side. So it broke the plane into three parts, cutting the front off where the pilots are, and then in the middle broke the plane into two, and then to the tail end again broke off the tail end. You know, so it's quite a horrific situation. You know, the one you always recall, and then you thank God for how you ask yourself, how did you survive? You keep asking yourself the question, how did you survive that?
Talking about the survival bit, three players in that team passed on. One was Uche Ikegu,
Ikegu. He was my roommate.
Then Omale, that's not his real name.
Omale is his real name.
Yeah, he used to play for Bendel Insurance before. And I can't remember the third person.
It's two players.
Two players and two members.
Yeah, the two players, one air hostess and two pilots. The two pilots were dead on their seat with the seat belt strapped together with them. Everything they fell out on the floor because of the impact took out the whole of the cockpit. So the girl, you know, normally air hostess sits at the back where the tail end is, where their seat is. So that's where the last impact now on the plane that divided the plane into two, that was where the air hostess was sitting. So that's how, that was what killed her also.
Wow. So, I'm trying to replay the whole experience back now. So after you were all evacuated, that's the survivors of the plane crash. So what was the response of the Algerian officials, government, or the ELF system? What was it like before you came back? Then how did you come back to Nigeria eventually?
The Algerians, they were very, very helpful, you know, very, very helpful, because of the fact that they had this quick response to the accident, they were able to save a lot of lives, you know, and then save a lot of people from the injury, you know, sustaining lifetime injuries and all the rest of it. You know, so we're all rushed to the hospital, whether you're injured or not. We're all rushed to the hospital. They had the hospital. I cannot remember the name anymore. And
this was in Tamaraset.
Yeah, in Tamaraset. It's a small town. It's a small nomadic town. you know, not as big as that of Algiers or something, but it's a small nomadic town, you know. So the nomadicness is like, it gives you a setting, like if you're somewhere in Sokoto, one remote area in Sokoto area, that's how the setting is, you know. So, but even at that, they tried, they helped us, they took us all to they examined us. The people that needs attention was attended to, you know, and then some people were put on oxygen just to help them breathe because of the impact of on their chest and everything. So even Uche didn't die inside the plane. Omali was the only one that died inside the plane because he was hit by the cabin so that hit trapped his neck on the seat while he was sleeping. So he didn't have any chance. So, but Uche, the cabin also, because the cabin was the greatest. It was the greatest this thing for most people because when it dropped down, the impact hit a lot of people either on the shoulder, back, and then, you know. So Uche was lying on the three seater, and then the impact hit him at the, you know, directly on his back, breaking his spinal cord. So from then on, even when he was in the hospital, he was in a lot of pain. You could hear the shout and everything, no matter the amount of morphine or injections we were giving him, didn't stop the pain. They held on to him because they were making plans to fly him to Algiers. They held on to him for like two days, you know, to make preparations and everything, but he gave up the ghost the second day. He was in a lot of pain.
So then, talking about the evacuation back to Lagos, and back then, Continental Games is that you play your first game the first week, then you play your second game 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
So what was that period like? It seems that CAF were not compassionate enough. They insisted that what was it then from then onwards?
Yeah, because you know sometimes you feel that we could understand that they have a program which was already has been set already to end before the season will end, you know, and then we were meant to play the second leg 2 weeks later. So we asked CAF to give us a little bit of breather just to have, you know, because of players were injured, because it's almost all the main team Tunis. So we had a lot of injuries, we had death, so we're dealing with a lot of things. So, but first of all, you know, I think we were there for almost 5 days, waiting for the sick to be well, the injured to at least have a little bit of recovery before they fly us back to Nigeria. So the officials and the Nigerian government and the Nigerian Football Federation were making plans. So they sent on the fifth day they sent Cabo Airlines. So Cabo Airlines 747 came to take all of us, both the dead and the living. So we all got onto the plane. The people that died were put into caskets and put on the, you know, in the cargo hold, and then they took everybody away. So we dropped in Lagos. So we dropped in Lagos. Chief Wayan came into where the officials of the NFA, Chief Wayan, Ms. Lemiaka came. They all met us in Lagos. So they came into the plane with the Nigerian officials and everything to welcome us back. Everybody was weeping because you went with your fellow colleagues, all for them, some of them to be at the bottom of the plane, you know. So it was quite a sad situation. So we stayed the night in Lagos, and then we had to take another flight again from Lagos to where it tryouts, which the Imo State government, you know, produced for us to come back to where. So Trias got to Were, there was this massive storm. Tried the first landing, couldn't land. Had to bail out again, and everybody started shouting inside the plane. So he went out and turned around again, and then lowered himself, and then because he overshot the runway by landing nowhere, so he bailed out again. And you can imagine, after going through that horrific incident, and to be inside another one again, it was you had your heart on your hands. So finally, we landed. We could see our family when we came down. The airport was filled with massive people, because nobody. The story was that everybody died in the plane. That was the first story when he came out to Nigeria. So it was BBC that corrected that story, because the BBC, for some reason, I don't know how they got hold of the hotel, the hospital. So they were calling, but the hospital people were not able to give them a full detailed account of what is happening. So, and again, they don't speak English, they speak French. So fortunately, because I was a vice captain that time, I was a vice captain in my nationality then. So they said they were looking for who to talk to them, that somebody's on the phone. So they called me. I went, and somebody said, this is BBC, it was from BBC, and they are trying to confirm the story to see how many survivors and everybody survived, So that was where I said to them, I don't know the number of deaths, but the only thing is that we had survivors, because I could not divulge to them. I don't know what was happening with any other soul. But they said, is there any injuries? I said, yes, there are injuries, there's death, and then people were waiting for people to recover. They said, which hospital are you? Name of the hospital. I gave them the name of the hospital. And then they said, they tried to know the names of, can you give? I said, I don't know, because you cannot give out such information to anybody. So at the end of the day, I just said to them, what you know is that some people survived and some people died. So they didn't know. So they changed. They changed the news then again to say people. We have survivor. So that's how people in Nigeria knew that there was survivor, because when we came back, our families were saying that the first news that they got was that every one of us was dead. So you can imagine the panic and everything in their hand. So now when the news filtered again that some of us survived, then this anxiety, and everybody was waiting to see who survived and who died, So that long wait, when we got to Were, you will see the massive crowd of people, coming to pay their respect and everything. So we were ushered from there to the hotel, for everybody to stay in the hotel first. Just nobody went home on that day. Everybody was going to a Concord Hotel, checked in there. So we stayed in. That was what the Imo State government allowed. Said to everybody, every survivor of that, to that place. So we all stayed there some days to recruit. Your family will come and see you there, because what they were trying to do is that they were taking people away from their home, not to be besieged by crowd coming to see them and everything. At least give us a little bit of privacy, and to cool yourself, your head down, and to recall all the incidents that happened. So we had 1 week break. 1 week we stayed in the hotel, and then everybody now started moving to freeze our houses, and then we started resuming training again, because we needed to play the game. Because CAF gave us was an extra week. From the 2 weeks, normal 2 weeks, the other 1 week again, we had to, or we need to forfeit the match. So, but which we later partake, and then we lost the game based on, because we played 0-0 in Aware, and we lost 1-0 in Kamarase.
Wow, what a story that was. Okay, moving on from then. You moved to Rangers. How did that happen? I mean, you've had so much success in Wanyama National. Why then move to Rangers? And at the time, Wanyam was bigger than Rangers. So why the move?
I think it's two things, you know, because one, Rangers is in the East, irrespective of the fact that Wanyam had this global, in terms of the current global, let me use this situation. As at then, it's just like Man United and City. Currently now, City has the money and the players. But Man United has that name.
The history.
Yeah, and the history behind it. So, and Rangers have that history behind it. I played 5 years in Wanyam National. I played 5 seasons for Wanyam National. So, I needed a challenge today. You understand? Because when you stay, even although it wasn't easy for me because of I wanted to move, the general manager refused outright. But I said to him, no, you have to let me go, because every time teams keep coming for me, he refused. But in El Kanemi came, when El Kanemi had their money then, their win, which when the governor was madly interested in sports, he was bringing players from both the East and everywhere then. He came for me. He refused to let me go. Julius Berger came again. When Julius Berger started playing the Continental, he refused to let me go. So this time, so I stayed that 5 years. I needed something to challenge myself, you know. So I said, okay, Rangers, he didn't want to let me go because of the rivalry between Wanyam National and Rangers. From the then Spartans to Wanyam National, and then now against the Rangers. So it's always a fierce battle. And every player who has played in the East will want to be reckoned also that he has played for Rangers.
So for you, it was more like you wanted to play for the biggest team in terms of history.
Yeah. So and then to challenge myself also in a new environment. So, because in Wanyam, because of my years there and my performance there, the dominance that I have, you know, and then the establishment that I've established myself there, made me feel that, you know, like you feel that irrespective of anything, you will still play, you still be play as a first team player. So that the challenge is not more, the challenge wasn't there for me anymore. You know, because if the fans come Saturday, they don't see me on the pitch, it becomes a problem for the coach. If they don't play well or if they lose. So you get to that stage that then you look at yourself, no, you need to be going forward now, because then I was a member of the national team, you know, then from West Half and all the rest of it. So I said, no, I need to challenge myself. So I went to Rangers, signed for Rangers. We started the season there. I ended up again. That was the last time. That was the third time now I won the highest goal scorer with Rangers. So after that, that's how I moved out from Rangers to African Sports.
Right, before moving to African Sports, talk us through, you mentioned that at the time you were invited to the national team, which I want to come to. You were invited in an era when Clemens Westall was building a national team, and he selected a lot of home-based players across the nation. So talk us through obviously your record speaks for itself, but talk us through your time in the national team.
In everything that you do, when there's no competitiveness, you don't really get the best of anybody. You don't really get the best of anything that you're doing. And what West Ham did was to make sure that there was this continuous improvement of players in the national team. And then he brought in that competitiveness back again into the national team. Why? Because he tried to make sure that nobody have a grip on any jersey in the national team. And then to make sure, to tell you that if you don't hold on to that jersey, somebody else is going to take that jersey from you. So he also And that was the era also where our players started going out to Europe now in mass. You know, we started moving out to play for other European club size and everything. So
Belgium.
Yeah. So that was the period of the exodus of Nigerian players. So we were all moving out. The ones that are still at home, they were still putting pressure on the people coming back now who has gone to sign outside and come back again. So we had a strong home-based team and a strong invited players from outside. So even you can imagine where players who were playing abroad then were not sure whether they will be picked or the home-based player will be picked. So that was how West Ham made sure that everybody was on their toes while they were in the national team. So you see the likes of Finidi George. Finidi George was my roommate as a 10. You know, the likes of Precious Mounier. So we are all part of the home-based player. So then you see the foreign players then who were like the likes of Rashidi Yakini, Uche Okechukwu, Stephen Keshi, even Ruben Agbola then. You know, so we there was a lot of players coming from abroad. Both the ones who were born abroad, who wanted to establish themselves with the Nigerian national team, everybody was coming back now. So we had this core. In the national team, sometimes we are almost like 40 players in the national team. Because we have almost close to about 20 to 25 players home base and another 15 to 18 foreign base players invited. So it was this clash, both in training and in matches. And you see, that helped the national team in that massive progression of Nigerian national team. So Nigerian national team became a force to reckon with all over the world. The national team was exciting to watch. People wants to see Nigerian national team play matches. So the focus in Africa then was in Nigeria. And that also helped the league, because when the focus of players, of Nigerian players, everybody now in the league also wants to perform, to come to be invited to the national team. So every weekend, you know quite well that the league match you're going to have is going to be one tough game. No, there's no game that was easy.
So obviously, then you move to African sports.
Yes.
And how many games did you play in the national team?
I played 14 games, like you said. I played 14 national team games.
And those were the qualifiers for the African Cup of Nations and...
And then the World Cup.
Right.
You know, and then we also had some friendly matches, like in the South American friendly games also that we played against Colombia, Peru, Argentina. You know, after the World Cup, after the World Cup of 1994. So we had a good set, you know. So and after that, now everybody started thinking of wanting to move abroad. You know, you had offers and everything. So you now started making plans of how to also play outside.
So talk us through your football career outside of Nigeria.
Yes, I was in Nigeria. Then I was in Rangers anyway, because I've left the Wayan National. So I had scouts come from African Sports. Then they said, because African Sports was one of the teams that was playing continental in Africa. You know, I think the president then was Philippe de Zenzou. They had two big teams in Côte d'Ivoire. One was ASEC and then the other one was African Sports. So the rivalry was unparalleled to anything that I've ever seen before in my life. Because the fans from ASEC don't mingle with the fans from with African sports. The fans, if there's a fan that owns any bus line or anything, that is, and he's an ASEC supporter, the fans from Africa Sports will not ride on those buses. If, whether they are empty or anything, they will not go in. So that was where I saw rivalry to the core. You know, so it was quite an interesting country. It's a small country, but they worship football. They worship football, and then football was like, it's like it's a second religion to them. If you are an ASEC, you are an ASEC for life. It's not like they don't waver. If you're an African sports, you're an African sports for life. So I moved there, not speaking French because they speak French. So you're in a foreign land, so you're engaged with language. They gave you language tutor who try to help you to understand the language, you know. And then I had a successful 1 year season with them. You know, played in the African Cup, you know, but we lost in the semi-finals to the Moroccans, Zamalek, you know. So after that, I now moved away from Abidjan to Dubai, you know. So played for Al Ahly there, you know, for another one season again. So I moved again there to Europe now. I played in Russia, in Alania, in Georgia. Played there again for one season. And then I moved, because you're constantly searching, you know, for something. So obviously you're testing yourself, you know, because you don't want to be stuck somewhere. You're looking for where to help, you know, grow your career. So that's how, from Russia now, I came to Belgium. And I played for Dendelo, you know. Then after I finished playing for Dendelo, we got promotion. And unfortunately for me, I had this massive, massive injury that, you know, wouldn't let go. You tried everything, but it's just there and there. So at one stage, as long as you're not producing for the club anymore and you've not fully recovered, it became a problem. So I just decided to say, I think it's high time I, you know, call it a quit. If your body, because when your body doesn't allow you to do certain things that you want to do, then, you know, you have to advise yourself and then, you know, tell yourself the truth. So, and now it was hard because you want to continue, but you can't.
So when did you quit? What year did you finally quit football?
In 2003, finally quit.
Wow. Wow, what a journey. The journey of a football player. It's been wonderful talking through your career and everything. And as we're talking, I was just thinking about football in those days. I mean, some memories are just coming back to my mind. And wonderful talking through your journey. Thanks for joining us on Sport Africa. It's a pleasure having you.
Thank you very much for having me.
We'll come your way again, where we'll bring you another interesting edition of Sport Africa. My name is Oba Adeola Mokomowo. And please, again, remember to subscribe onto our podcast. For those of you that listen from Apple, please just click on that purple button and give us your comment and your feedback. We really appreciate it. Until we come your way again, have a wonderful day.